Sure.
Red buttons in play. Let's go.
Oh, all right. I was gun school.
Gun school, day one, I wanted to get you on the horn and talk about it because.
Okay.
Like everyone knows, we chat about guns here and there, and you know a lot more about them than I do. I always thought of myself as the one that was late to the party, pal, kind of thing.
Yeah, well, better late than
better. This is part of the, and we've been talking about what the requirements are for me to even be able to, you know, conceal carry or get a pistol, because New York State is. What do you say? Leasing my rights back to me?
Yeah. You're asking permission to exercise your constitutional rights, where other states and other jurisdictions have gone like, well, it's kind of like your right to do this, so we don't have a real problem. And there is no problem.
Hmm.
Except New York is a problem.
Right. And not only that, we talked about that. That was part of the class. I mean, people are, you know, why are we living in this state? Oh, my God. You know,
exactly. Get the fuck out. Leave.
You know. But that's not an option for me right now. But I decided to go through this process.
Sure.
Even though other processes have been found unconstitutional and the court shot them down, they're still having us do this stuff. So we went through a lot of the basics, some things I knew. Some things I actually learned, like the lead, it's not sulfonate, it's, I can't remember what the component, it's a residue from the primers.
Lead stifenate.
Stifenate, not sulfonate. I thought it was sulfonate. Anyway.
Want me to tell you how they build primers too?
Well, I can tell you, yeah, but that was something that I learned that it was, you know, guns have a lot of hazardous materials and heavy metals that are utilized.
Oh, the firearm itself does not.
No.
The ammunition.
Right.
Yes, obviously.
Correct. And, you know, you're supposed to use, like a lead remover type soap first and then.
Cold water.
Right.
Yep.
So that was something I learned. I don't remember doing that. When we were young, but
safety, what's that? Lead poisoning, never heard of it.
You know, your clothes have to be washed in a separate washer because it gets all over the place. And anyway,
let's not get carried away. Okay.
I mean,
your average recreational shooter is not going to run into a problem of lead poisoning. Okay.
Yes. He did all drive that home. He was, but he had a lead level that was higher than I thought. I was like, whoa, 9. Yikes. But, you know, 15's bad. 20's deadly. Anyway, you start forgetting stuff. But
what? What did you say?
You start forgetting stuff. Hey, no, shush. Oh, anyway. Yeah. So it was a well-informed, you know, they're both very well-experienced, well-informed. I like those kind of sessions. I like learning about certain things. Some things sounded familiar, some things didn't. But all in all, the part two is tomorrow. We get into a lot more of the laws and circumstances. Yeah. And they even said, some people hear all this stuff and say, I'm not caring, screw that. I'll just go to Target, you know, Target shoot or home defense. So you really have to be educated on the laws, right, Alpha? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. You know, when you can use it, when you can't, not getting into the situation in the first place, you know, it's like.
Well, exactly. All right. Yeah. So while you're there. Okay. So keeping in mind that I used to teach this class to literally thousands of people. I taught concealed carry classes for in Minnesota when I lived there for a number of years. I became very involved in that community, obviously. And, it's really a different mindset that you have to have to, you know, I'm glad that you're going through. All right, so hold on a second. So I'm glad that you're doing this. If for no other reason, then you should have something that's convenient, easy, portable, to defend your home and your life with.
Mm-hmm.
Number one priority is human life, obviously. Mm-hmm. We don't shoot anybody over property. No. Ever. There's no profit in that for anybody. It's a bad thing to do. Don't do it. I'm glad you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when push comes to a shove, harsh language isn't going to stop somebody from hurting you.
Right.
Okay. So I'm glad that you're taking the steps to do that. Mm-hmm. I did all this stuff way back when we were, you know, when we had more hair on our heads.
I remember. Okay. Well, I remember when you got your Browning High Power. Yeah.
Oh, right. That was my first handgun, was a Browning High Power. Single action, 9mm, 13 shots in the magazine, high visibility sights, single action. Fantastic pistol. A little outdated by today's standards, but I would still carry one. However, I'm glad you're going through the process, and I'm glad that you're taking classes. I never dissuade anybody from doing those kinds of things. What really gets under my skin is the fact that you're being forced to do that to exercise a constitutional right, mm-hmm. and you're paying through the nose to do it.
And I'll tell you, the county I live in, up here in the upstate New York, is not as bad as the county next to me. We were comparing applications for a permit between two counties.
Oh, yeah.
Mine is a piece of cake. The one next to me, the gentleman that was going through it, had to have three sets of the same application where you had to print front and back pages. No single page. You can't do that. You have to have the person that's doing the references, which I found out was actually not overturned by the court. Something else was, but you know, the instructor said that's not the case. But the references... the person has to sign them three times, and if it's in blue ink, no good. It has to be in black ink. I mean,
it makes absolutely no sense, because blue ink is the blue or green are the two ink colors that are accepted in government contracting for signature.
Wet ink. And it said in the instructions from the county next to me. I look, you and I are on the same page with this. I looked at him. I said, oh, good God. And I have it easy. I can go right up to the sheriff's department, get my fingerprints, you know, and get it done. Anyway, so that's...
Oh, yeah. That's great. But, you know, why do you have to go through these extracurricular activities to go ahead and exercise a constitutional right that has been upheld by the Supreme Court countless times now? The state of New York got their asses handed to them in court in a 6-3 decision that changed the entire Second Amendment landscape in this country forever. And your state, who got their asses handed to them, who got told that all of this crap was unconstitutional, they just doubled down and they don't give a shit. And
that's what they did. Anyway. That's what this course is. Now I'm going through it. And I have to say, the safety part of it is fine. I'm fine with it. I mean, that part.
Oh, I'm totally okay with people getting education on handguns and safety and storage and use and legality. Yeah. I think it's great. However, you shouldn't have to.
Anyhow, you shouldn't have to. But this is the process. So we'll talk more, you know, when I do the second class, but there's also a practical too. I have to show that I'm, you know, not going to, and they really emphasize safety, things that you taught me.
Sure.
You know, don't wave the gun around. Don't point it at anyone. Assume that it's loaded.
That's right.
Make sure,
be sure of your target and what's behind it.
That's correct. You know, you want to make sure you're not going to go through something or into someone else, or a tree, or like a house if you're doing target shooting. And the biggest one was don't point at anything you don't want to kill or destroy heavily.
Well, you know, the four basic rules of gun safety: treat every gun like it's loaded, as if it were loaded. That means if you don't know what you're doing with the fucking thing and it's laying on a table, don't touch it.
Right.
Don't touch it. Number one. Number two, know your target and what's beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
Those are the two main things. Do not point a weapon at anything you are not willing to destroy
or kill. Correct.
destroy, kill, yeah, whatever, yeah, use right, whatever word you want. And every gun is always loaded.
Right. They talked about having an automatic, you know, a first aid kit, you know, like with ballistic type gauze and, you know,
sure,
a couple of tourniquets, not a joke. You should have those with you anyway, but you know, it's, it, as long as, you know, it can be enjoyed, but it has to be respected. And I think that's the key.
Well, generally speaking, shooting, target shooting is an incredibly safe sport if you do what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. I've seen people get hurt target shooting, and I've seen people get hurt in classes. Generally, it's somebody doing something stupid. However, you know, I've seen a hell of a lot more people get hurt on the ski hill than I have on a firing line.
Mm-hmm.
So put things in perspective. It's not really that dangerous a hobby if you just use, you know, the most important thing in the world when you have a gun in your hand is the 6 inches between your ears.
That's right. Yep. And, you know, and trigger finger discipline. You know, that finger doesn't go on that trigger until...
Full control of gun safety. Do not put your finger on the trigger until you are ready to fire. You have clearly identified your target, yeah, and what's beyond it. You've established that it is okay to shoot. Yes. Big one.
Yep. So other things, you know, like they got into the, you know, there's no law that says you have to put them in a safe, you know, and separate, you know, but it's, if your gun is out and you leave it around and it gets stolen or someone gets hurt with it, it's your responsibility. It's the permittee's responsibility to make sure that gun is secured at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And
where the police have no responsibility to protect you. So, you know, yeah, all the onus gets put on the civilian, right?
Exactly. But I mean, it's, you know, common sense ain't so common. I get it. But I, you know, I guess there's different, you know, some people have big safes, you know, like they have a,
oh yes, safe. They do.
Yep. I don't think I need that yet, but I will have a lockbox, you know, and keep, you know, that some people, you know, I guess there's no law either that says you have to keep the ammo separate. Well, you should. Did I understand?
No. Okay. Look, so here's the deal. Yep. Depends on your situation, right? Mm-hmm. It's never a bad idea to store ammunition separately from your firearms, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's just say that I might have a few things, mm-hmm, and if they're in the safe, they're obviously unloaded. The ammunition is kept in another location. It's mm-hmm stored separately. There are guns that you might have around your house that should be loaded. And if you are going to have a loaded firearm in your house, it is a very, very super good idea. Mm-hmm. And you have small children. It's a very, 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 very good idea for you to lock it up. Mm-hmm. Lock it up. Put it in a lockbox. Don't buy one of those stupid little lockboxes with the fingerprint reader.
Mm-hmm.
Buy the one with a push button combination and the turnkey.
Right, right.
Because that'll never fail on you, okay? Right. Those electronic fingerprint safes or the RFID safes are a really super bad idea.
Gotcha. That's what he said, too. Yeah, he said it wasn't a good idea.
Oh, wow. How about that, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, these guys, he's a retired federal agent.
And sure.
The other is a current auxiliary city, you know, Schenectady police officer, I guess.
That's great. That's great. Now, we talked a lot about it. You know, I went to the range today, too. It's been, it's how I relieve stress, mm-hmm, right? And there's a lot of work stuff going on, a lot of personal, just a lot of stuff going on. And I find it to be zen-like, mm-hmm, when I'm up on the shooting line and all it is just me, the target in front of me, and executing every shot as best as I can.
Mm-hmm.
Using the good fundamentals, it's a challenge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I went and did that today. Mm-hmm. I had a ball.
Good.
But I'm exhausted after doing it for an hour and a half because mm-hmm everything I'm doing, I'm focusing mm-hmm. on what I'm doing.
Right.
I'm not just there throwing bullets down the range just to go shoot lead. Okay. Mm-hmm. Everything is with a purpose.
Right.
It's like a professional golfer goes to the golf course and they go whack, 10 buckets of balls at the same target all day long just to get that stroke down and get the fundamentals down, the grip, the stance, the follow through, the swing, the body positioning. It's all the same thing. It's just another sport, man.
Yeah.
And sight alignment, trigger pull, stance, grip,
mm-hmm.
breath control, sight picture, alignment, press. Follow through, press. It's a cycle. It all repeats all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get really good at that cycle and you can recognize the cycle and you can just do it like it's second nature and you become what's called unconsciously competent.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to think about what you're doing anymore.
Right.
When that body, the mind, body, hand, eye coordination kicks in, it becomes kind of a bit of a poetry in motion thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun. I was talking to a very, very good friend of mine about shooting. I've been doing it for a very, very long time, obviously. Mm-hmm. When you're good at something, it feels good to do it.
Correct.
When you're just starting, it's very frustrating. But you have to remember to keep at it and remember what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Practice makes perfect.
Correct.
It requires finding somebody who can mentor you, who can stand next to you, who can critique you, who can coach you, and somebody that's going to be that's like a gym partner, right?
Right. So I happen, now that you mentioned that, I have a very good friend. We've known each other for just the second longest after you, Alpha, but he and I worked on the ambulance together. We've done all kinds of things. He's a member of the gun club that I put in my application too.
Oh, good.
So, he's going to be, I'm going to be going on vacation here come Monday. So when I get back, I'll call him up and he'll kind of take me through things because I still got to wait. It's going to be a couple of months. It's going to be
at least 6 months.
6 months.
Yeah, it'll be 6 months. Well, look, I know what you chose for a handgun and mm-hmm. it's not a bad choice. It's an excellent choice for your situation. It's a really good choice. That is not a target gun, mm-hmm. by the way.
Right.
I would highly recommend to anybody that's first starting out in the shooting sports. For self-defense, it doesn't make any damn difference. Let's call it the shooting sports. Let's get good at something before we say we're ready to defend ourselves, okay? Mm-hmm. Just as a for instance, you don't learn how to gunfight in the middle of a gunfight. It's a really bad idea,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
What do you want to do first? You want to learn your fundamentals.
Right.
Grip, stance, arm placement, head placement, eye box, sight picture, trigger pull, follow through, trigger squeeze, follow through, reset, do it all over again, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's almost no better way to do that than with a 22 caliber pistol.
Mm-hmm.
A 22 caliber target pistol, an auto loading 22.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody first starting out with this, get a 22 caliber revolver, a good one, or a 22 caliber automatic. You cannot believe how good you can get cheaply
mm-hmm.
by just practicing all of those fundamentals with a 22 caliber pistol. There's nothing saying you've got to throw 124 grain 9mm down the range all day long.
Mm-hmm.
It's cheaper, it's more efficient and more effective to practice those fundamentals with something that has very little, if any, recoil.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's highly accurate. It's got a good set of sights on it. Most 22 caliber automatic pistols have a really phenomenal trigger on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're fun to shoot and they're not expensive.
Do you remember the 22 you had?
Yeah, Browning Buckmark. Absolutely. Fantastic pistol.
I remember shooting that.
Oh, yeah. That pistol's still around. Yeah. It's still around. A member of the family still has that and still shoots it.
Mm-hmm. But that will be, the problem is in New York, I have to get my permit first.
That's right.
Before I can, you know, buy any that's more. But it's getting right. there. It's getting there. And that's what I would probably end up getting for target practice is a 22.
Because
you're right. It's the actual fundamentals, like you just mentioned, to get good at it so that when you go to something with a little more kick or, you know, it's not, you're not squeezing the trigger saying, oh, here comes the big bang. Oh God. You know, that kind of thing.
You know, right. In anticipation, you know, we find in new shooters, there's a level of fear, and I completely understand that fear, okay? Of this is a machine that's loud, and it jumps around, and there's fast-moving parts, and there's all this crazy shit that happens in milliseconds, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you tone that down in the very beginning, you don't develop the bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
The high recoil, the muzzle flip, all sorts of things can create all sorts of problems with new shooters. And those bad habits like diving the gun and anticipating the recoil, jerking the trigger, poor sight alignment will cause you to miss. Like I was at the range today and there was this couple, they were next to me and this guy comes over, he's watching me shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And his girlfriend was with him and she'd never shot or anything. She's from England. She's only seen guns in the movies, I think.
Bloody hell.
Yes. Cheerio. So she, you know, she was like, I heard her saying, she's like, I'm really scared. You know, I'm like, and I've heard that many dozens of times from people that are just learning how to shoot. I get it. Mm-hmm. Taking somebody to the range and throwing a 9mm handgun in a young lady's hands who's slight of build, or not really physically very strong and has no experience, that's a really bad idea.
Mm.
You're gonna ingrain fear, bad habits, flinching, you know, anticipation of recoil. You're going to develop all the bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And for anybody out there that's listening who sees all this handgun stuff and has watched John Wick and is like, holy shit, handguns are just so easy to use and you can just hit anything. No, a handgun is an expert's gun.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a gun for a beginner. An AR-15 is actually a really good rifle for a beginner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Shotguns are also an expert's tool. Don't make any mistakes there, all right? We'll talk about those maybe later, but handguns are very difficult to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
They're very difficult to shoot well.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to carry one, you better be damn sure that you're above average in your ability.
Mm. And that's something else that kind of like sticks in the back of my mind, especially since, you know, medical field, working at, you know, you're not going to break to the hospital with it. You're not allowed to, or that kind of stuff. But that's, you know, I've seen gunshot wounds, and you know, yes, you know what these things do. You know, so I hope that no one ever has to be in a position where they're at the other end of a deranged person that's hurting other people because they just don't care.
Let me tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to carry a gun, you know, like we're going to talk about this, I guess,
mm-hmm.
Because what you just said is important. If you're going to carry a gun, you got to think about things before you do it, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, I'm carrying a gun. I have the power of life and death in my waistband or on my hip or however. Well, it doesn't make any damn difference, all right? Mm. Just as an example, you're carrying a handgun for defense in your waistband. You got to remember, you do have that power of life and death in your hand, but the problem is when, what's your limit? Where are you going to employ that firearm and for what reason?
Mm-hmm.
All right. If you're in a public place and somebody comes in and they have a long gun and they start shooting, if you're of marginal ability, your best bet's to run for the loading dock and get out the back door. Mm-hmm. Okay. Save yourself and your family and your kids. Mm-hmm. All right. That gun is to protect you and yours, mm-hmm. not me and mine. Okay. If you're carrying it, that's for you. That's not to protect me. If you can protect me in the course of protecting yourself because you have no other choice, you or your family members are in imminent danger of death or great bodily harm. You might think, okay, that's my line. You have to have that line in your head, and you have to have the mentality that says, if I'm in this situation, this is what I might do. Notice how I said might.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One of the worst feelings in the world is to look at a human being through a set of gun sights. Mm. Trust me. It is a scary, terrifying experience. Mm. Thankfully, I've walked through the three situations that I've been in my life without having to fire a shot.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had to, I was ready to.
Mm-hmm.
The mere presence of a firearm in those three situations completely neutralized the threat.
Mm-hmm.
I consider that a win.
Hmm.
What are the three rules? Don't go stupid places with stupid people and do stupid things.
Right.
I was doing none of those three things when those three instances happened to me. Mm-hmm. Okay. Had I fired, I would have been justified all three times. Thankfully, I didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
But trust me when I tell you, that gun came out of the holster so fast, you have no idea. It was training, just basic training. Fall back to your training, muscle memory, pull it out. And the control comes in when you come in and you point the gun in and your finger's not yet on the trigger.
Right.
As you're pointing in, because you have not made the decision to have to shoot. You're still using verbal commands at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's your first line of defense? What's your first line of defense? Somebody comes up to you and they're coming at you and they're looking at you, their scope locked on you. They might have something in their hand or they don't.
Mm-hmm.
They're bigger than you. You're older. You don't really, you're not really ready to necessarily going to survive a fist fight.
Mm-hmm.
What's the first thing you do?
Verbal
challenge.
What's that?
Stop.
Yeah.
Verbal challenge. Put your hands up. Stop.
Yeah.
Stop right there. Don't come any closer.
Mm-hmm.
Don't come any closer. Back the fuck up. Keep backing up. When you can't back up anymore and you can't run away and you think you're going to get hurt, it's unfortunately, that's the point in time where bad shit's going to happen real fast.
Mm. Well, that was something else that you mentioned, the muscle memory of practice, right? So
correct.
You don't just go and you put the gun on the table or the bench and then you do your shooting. It should be from the holster. You should practice getting into the holster and out of the holster and, you know,
correct.
And bringing it up and putting it on target and, you know, all those things. So you're right. I would be wanting to get out of there and not have to engage, you know, unless it's, you know, someone's coming to my house, coming up the stairs and they're still coming. That's the only time. There's nothing else you can do. There's nowhere else to back up.
Yeah. Well, right. Property is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Life and limb is another.
Right.
You know, somebody breaks into your house and you live upstairs, like your bedroom's upstairs. If somebody breaks in, the minute they hit those stairs, it's no longer about your shit. Right?
Yep.
And that becomes a very unfortunate situation very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
That's called get out the shop vac.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
You know somebody in the disaster recovery business, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Call them up. See what he has to say. I'm sure he's done that job more than once.
Yeah, it's a mess.
Messy. Well, look, you know, I'm glad you're doing it. It's unfortunate that where you live is so difficult. It is so difficult there. You know, AR-15s. Let's talk about that for a quick second. I know we want to move on, probably talk about some other things, but AR-15s are ubiquitous. They're everywhere. Everybody's got an AR-15, at least where I live and where I used to live. People have got machine guns, AR-15s, towed artillery pieces, you name it. It doesn't make any goddamn difference about what kind of gun it is. An AR-15 is a very useful tool for somebody to protect their family, to protect their life, and it does a better job than a handgun. Within the confines of the operational environment that you live in inside your home, or say you've got a big piece of property outdoors. Okay, that's a different set of circumstances. We're not going to get into everything. But it really galls me. It really galls me that the government protects its employees with AR-15s with standard capacity magazines holding 30 rounds. That's, you can't do that.
No, I know.
Not for you.
You no, can't the magazine that. Has to be mechanically bolted, fixed yes. to the body, which is...
It's called
the frame, bolt. Sorry. Frame.
The receiver.
Well, the it, there's the...
The magazine has to be permanently affixed to the lower receiver.
Right.
In an AR-15. It's called the bullet button. It's the same the bullshit. It's the same bullshit they have in California. It's so, all unconstitutional. It all got struck down.
So what is it going to take for us to get back our rights? Well, if someone has to sue.
Massive act of civil disobedience.
Yeah. That's the other thing, too.
It's a massive act of civil disobedience. Yeah. I used to live in New York. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that. You were in a different group of friend group than I was in. The people that I were with, everybody was armed to the teeth. Do you think that's changed?
No.
No, fuck no. No. Absolutely not. It will not change.
Right.
I don't advocate breaking the law, but I also don't advocate yielding to unconstitutional bullshit.
Right. So the question I had was, so because the US USCCA was able to, again, in the Bruin decision,
that was New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, wasn't it? NYSERPA.
NYSERPA my versus mistake. Bruin. No, that's a different organization. My mistake. I thought, right. Yeah.
USCCA is different. Yeah. I know the president of USCCA.
All right.
I'll tell you a story about him in a minute.
Well, anyway, so New York came up with all these, you know, like the, you have to go through the safety course, you have to go through a practical, you have to do. So they changed the entire system to get the concealed, and everyone gets a concealed permit now. There's no more target, you know, for home protection and home and target. So I guess that's how they complied with the Supreme Court ruling in whosoever, you know, Assembly and Senate's eyes to stick it to the people. But Hochul is an idiot, so whatever.
No, she's not an idiot. She's a criminal mastermind.
Oh, all right. I see where you're going. I get it. I mean, it's just mind-boggling that they're just giving the double bear middle finger to the Supreme Court, and they come up with different laws and different iterations of those laws to get around the what the meaning of the law should be, and they're forgetting their oath to the Constitution. As
that doesn't mean anything safety. To them, anyways. They wipe their ass with the Constitution,
right? Anyway,
They're not screwing the Supreme Court, my friend. They're screwing you.
Well, I'm looking at it from my vantage point, my seat right now. You know, because there's nothing I can do about it. If you want to do the, you know, like I said, I have a deposit down on a firearm, and I have to stare at it from behind the glass if I ever want to see it, because I can't get it until the permit goes through, and that's a 6-month process.
It's absolutely absurd.
That's what I'm frustrated about. But the safety part of it, the silver lining in all this is there is a safety course that goes with it, the concealed carry will be part of it. But even the AR-15, you have to have 10 rounds, and it has to be, you know, the old-fashioned way. That's just dumb. The whole thing is just ridiculous.
It's just really stupid. It's all just absolutely window dressing and just knee-jerk reaction bullshit that's absolutely meaningless and has done nothing to curb gun violence.
Right.
You know what curbs gun violence?
A good person with a gun.
Well, yes. And put fucking felons in jail where they belong.
That's right. Yep.
Follow the goddamn laws that are already there. You'll have to pardon me. I'm a little spicy tonight. I'm really tired. It's been a long week. It's aggravating, isn't it?
It is. But this is just day one. Tomorrow I go back for day two, and then I have to do practical. Right. I have to get my fingerprints done. But I'll keep everyone advised of what's going on with
that. You haven't done fingerprints yet?
Not yet.
Do you have to do ink copies, or do you live scan?
No, it's electronic.
All live scan?
Yeah, live scan. Yeah.
Go to your sheriff's department and let them live scan you there.
Well, they farm it out to, they give you a prescription basically to go get it somewhere else. You know, third party. Anyway.
Really? The sheriff's department doesn't do live scan there,
I don't think so. I don't know. Anyway. So that's my adventure thus far with getting my concealed carry permit here in New York.
What a joke. What a joke.
So I wanted, since we're on the topic of Hochul and the complete total ridiculosity that she is. So I was telling you on the other day regarding the real estate market. We were talking about markets the other day, the last time we chatted. We were talking about prices and cars and, you know, 401ks. And I want to come to something else that's kind of sitting in my craw the wrong way, and that's the real estate market.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I was a homeowner. Now I'm renting right now. But when I was a homeowner and houses were, you know, the interest rates were not bad. The prices were a little bit higher because you could borrow more money cheaply. And everyone was happy. And the minute they started running the printing press and you have all this money out in the economy that's not backed by anything but just like pure faith, which we have none, when it goes towards the federal government and the Federal Reserve, of course. Because we're printing so much money, we're trying to monetize that debt. That's really what the whole idea of this is. But when it comes to the real estate market, because there's so much money out there, they have to control inflation. Now, they're not really controlling anything, to be honest with you. The inflation is just running away. However, go ahead.
Well, you have too much money chasing too few
things. Yeah, Dan Bongino does a really good job explaining.
Well, that's any economist's explanation is too much money chasing too few things.
Right.
But that are in high demand.
So yeah. The inflation is being artificially...
The housing market's artificially inflated, yes.
Well, inflation is part of what I'm getting at is so the housing market. Let's go right to that. The cost for housing has not come down at all to be commensurate with the increased interest rates that the Federal Reserve has been putting into place, because I can't understand why. 7.99% right now for a mortgage with housing prices that have not come down makes housing unaffordable. And because it's unaffordable.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on a minute.
Wait. Okay. Go ahead.
You have people that have houses and they've got a 1.99 or 2.99% mortgage, right?
Yeah.
Their house is now worth way more than they paid for it, right?
Correct.
Because the prices have shot up.
Right.
Their mortgage payment hasn't gone up. Okay, so they're at a low interest rate. They're good. They have no motivation to sell that house and get into a 7.99% mortgage somewhere else.
Well, that goes to my next point, is that the supply for housing is so deflated. There's not enough.
There's no inventory.
That's correct. There's no inventory, and there's not going to be any inventory anytime soon.
No, nobody is. We talked about this before. Mm-hmm. Nobody's trading up, right?
Correct.
You know, the main idea of owning a house is you buy a starter house, right? You buy a starter house. Your dad gives you some money. Mm-hmm. You forge the paperwork. Blah 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 blah. You know the deal, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you get your first little, you know, ranch. You know, back in our parents' day, that rancher house that we grew up on, you know, in mm-hmm. you know the town there. You know, I think my parents paid like $21,000 for it in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Less. Their mortgage payment was like $60 a month.
Wow.
$80 a month or $100 a month. Something mm-hmm. stupid. I mean, it was just a stupid low amount of money.
Right.
How much is that house worth now?
$400,000.
Exactly.
So now... One of the things that also has been going on in the housing market is that the houses, especially a year ago, correct me if I'm wrong, Alpha, it was about a year ago to mm-hmm. a year and a half ago. Do you remember when the house went on the market? This is right before the interest rates went through the roof, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the minute the house went on the market and it sold for 20%, 30% more than list price. And you had to act on it very quickly. People are buying houses without doing inspections. They're buying it on sight, unseen.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just things that just roll, make my head spin.
Oh, right? Yeah. People just doing stupid shit.
And where do you think all this... The ability to buy houses sight unseen with deep pocketfuls where they're not really getting mortgages. They're just paying full 20% over list price. These were large corporations that were buying houses, right?
Hold no.
Yes. No. Yes, they were.
Hold on.
Okay.
Hold
on. Because
I know in this area, the corporations aren't buying the houses. Not here. BlackRock and all those people, they're not buying houses here.
You sure about that?
I'm absolutely positive about it. This is all consumer buying here. That's a frenzy to get into anything, okay? And people were spending, like you said, 10, 20, 30, 40% over asking because the competition for houses was so high, mm-hmm. right?
Well,
there was very little supply on the market.
A year and a half ago, yes. But that's not...
All of a sudden,
yeah, but understand there was also houses, mm-hmm. $700,000, $1 million houses, all these houses.
Sure.
That were also going for 10%, 20% over list price were corporations like BlackRock and all these other conglomerate or hedge fund type stuff were buying the houses sight unseen. That was in this area in New York. Now, Hochul just got herself in trouble. There was an article that came out from the New York Post. It talks about they want Hochul's head on a platter because the BlackRock is now renting to the state these houses they bought. And guess who's renting them? The illegal aliens.
Guess who's renting the house? Not the illegal aliens, the state of New York.
For the illegal aliens. That's what I meant.
Correct. You're paying the rent on
that's
that
correct.
House. You
that
are paying the
rent. Is what I was wanted to bring up.
Okay. Everyone, well, that you know, bring up that that's a relatively newer thing.
Oh, it's a very new thing, and there are a lot of upset people, including myself.
Well, you should be upset.
Hochul is totally in bed with a crooked criminal syndicate, which is what our government is.
Well, okay, so back up the conversation for 5 seconds here, okay?
Beep, beep, beep.
Exactly. Yeah. You said people are buying houses sight unseen for 20% over with no inspection.
And I'm saying that was BlackRock.
And I'm saying it's consumers doing it here.
No. Where you are, not by me.
Okay, I'm going to give you an example.
Okay.
I have a neighbor who did that very thing.
Mm-hmm.
They paid 30% over asking on an already inflated price on a home. Waived inspection.
Yes.
Even though there was some things in the disclosure that, you know, I might have had somebody take a, I don't buy a car without a qualified mechanic crawling through the thing with a fine tooth comb.
Right.
Why the fuck would you spend $525,000 on a townhouse where there's a known water issue on the corner of the foundation with no inspection? Why? Because they were desperate to buy a house. They waived the inspection to get the deal.
So in your case, I would say they should have rented, just saying. And two, that's a different situation where you are, and I understand that. But up here, the big corporate mega corps were buying up houses left and right. Anytime they went on the market, they bought them. Now illegals are moving in, thanks to the leasee being the state of New York. That is a problem. Anyway.
Well, yeah, that's a problem.
And it pisses me off.
Well, the real estate market is, well, you're talking about a situation that I'm sure is happening. But mm-hmm. what I'm telling you is, if we're going to talk about the real estate situation, that's one problem.
No, that's, I hear what you're saying, that the inventory's down, the prices are still high, and the interest rates are now sky high. Nothing's moving, nothing's going to happen. What I predict is going to happen is that the housing market is going to crash like we've never seen before.
Oh, you're going to see all these people with these houses, my neighbor in particular. Mm-hmm. What's going to wind up happening is, I know what the people who bought that house before them, I know what they bought the house for. Mm-hmm. I've been here long enough to know what they bought the house for. Let's just say the owner before the new neighbors moved in over here, let's just say they made a super tidy profit. I know what they bought the house for. Mm-hmm. That house was marked up $150,000 over what they paid for it just 5 years ago.
Wow.
And these people walked in the door about a year and a half ago, and they paid an exorbitant amount of money for this home. When the bottom falls out of the market, they're going to find themselves literally upside down.
That's correct.
And people are going to start defaulting. This is going to make 2008 look like the great, like nothing.
A minor recession.
This is going to be a catastrophe of epic proportions.
So my thought is, I'm going to hang tight where I'm at. I ain't buying anything right now.
Let it crash, baby. Yep. Let it burn.
Once it crashes, then I'll be happy to buy something.
You go do you at that point, but
that's right.
Until that happens and everybody calms down, but what you're going to find is the balkanization of the country, and this is kind of like a demographic thing. Mm-hmm. People like you and me are not sticking around in these shithole blue states anymore. Mm. Okay, I'm not sticking around for too much longer. I'm on a real short suspense, baby. Riding the train to freedom land, because. Yeah. If you live in a blue state, you're going to get eaten alive.
Yep.
You have no idea what the fuck these people are up to behind closed doors in these blue states, because they're so broke.
Yes, they are.
Do you know why they're broke?
Because they keep spending to oblivion.
Well, they keep spending more than they make, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, the schools are killing them. The pensions are killing them. We've talked about this before.
Right.
All the enviro wackos in the state of Maryland are in for a bit of a shock. Mm-hmm. They just changed the vehicle registration and road usage fees, and they just changed everything about how you register cars in the state of Maryland and your registration fees and user fees. Okay, so let me explain this to you. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. I don't know if anybody knows this or not, but most vehicle registrations in most states are done by weight, not by class of vehicle anymore. That's passenger right. vehicle. You know, that used to be like a Class C passenger vehicle, blah, 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 blah. You know, no big deal. Two axle, three axle, four axle. They did it by axles, not mm-hmm. by weight. Yeah. They've changed all that shit because the rationale is if that car is heavier, it uses more of the road. It does more damage over time. And it's going to cost us X amount of dollars per car to fix it. Okay, that's the equation that they use. They just declared that EVs are in the heaviest weight class possible. So all these people who got off scot-free are now going to have to pay $370 every 2 years to use the road with their EV in the state of Maryland.
And also it's because EVs drive by the gas station. You can wave. That's nice. It kind of has a good feeling to it, right? But the problem is they're not spending any money on the taxes that go per gallon. So there's been a drop in the number of the amount of tax income.
You're exactly right, but hold on. But wait, there's more.
Oh, boy.
Not only are you going to pay more because of the weight, exactly what you just said is a separate trick. That's another $300 every 2 years because you're not paying gas tax. So they're going to get you one way or the other.
Oh, they always got you.
How the hell does that feel? And oh, have you opened your electric bill lately?
I'm on the budget plan, so every month I pay the same amount of money, but yeah, it's going up.
Oh, I'm on a budget plan. My bill hasn't changed in a number of years.
Yeah.
I got my bill this month. It went up 22%.
Ugh.
Just like that.
Let's go, Brandon.
Unfucking believable, right?
One more thing before we go.
We're not going.
Well, all right. Well, I have one more thing I want to add.
Go ahead.
Then you can add, right? Okay.
Sure.
In terms of ivermectin, I remember sending you this article that goes over 8 peer-reviewed journal articles. It talks about how ivermectin is able to stop the mechanism of, you know, how the mechanism of a virus works, and it stops the cold dead in its tracks. And everything that had... You know, the CDC's had to retract that crap. The FDA has had to retract the fact that it's a horse tranquilizer and horse pill. It's not ketamine. It's, you know, it's ivermectin, but it's not a horse pill. And there was cases that have gone through the Supreme Court that were basically doctors. This doctor that was an acute care physician worked in an ICU, was like the pioneer for using ultrasound to, instead of a stethoscope, to look at lungs, you know, and the fluid and the, you know, the sounds. Look at the sounds. Don't listen to them.
You're visualizing.
Yes, you're visualizing the lung tissue with an ultrasound. It's amazing stuff.
And it's cheap.
Oh, it's very cheap. But the thing was, he was pushing ivermectin. He was pushing vitamin D. He's talking about how we talked about this all the time. Everyone knows what we're talking about. We wrote about it. And now ivermectin is more effective than Paxlovid, which is garbage. Stuff is crap. Doesn't work. So is Tamiflu. Garbage. Doesn't work. But you know what does?
Ivermectin.
Ivermectin does.
Ivermectin, D3, quercetin, zinc, vitamin C,
Zithromax,
and a multivitamin will keep you really good and healthy.
I've done it 14 out of 15 times. One person was a little bit farther already through their illness and probably getting better on their own. But I would say 14 out of 15 is a good 93% effective.
I'll tell you what, dude. I felt like that. I'll tell everybody one more time. I was sick for a couple of days when that package showed up in the mail from, you know, God knows where. It just happened to have some things in it. When I took that with the other things that you're supposed to take with it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel better in a matter of days. It was literally hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the worst flu that I'd ever had. It was very miserable. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna deny it. It was terrible. And it dragged on for a few days. It was terrible. I took that stuff. The symptoms all subsided. I got some sleep. I felt better. The fever broke. And the next day, by the end of the day, it was almost as if nothing happened. I had some congestion. I had a little bit of phlegmy chest. Other than that, I was 90% on the road to recovery.
You're welcome. So there is a cure for the flu, everyone. And the common cold.
Yep.
Just saying.
Ivermectin, zinc, D3, quercetin.
Bingo.
And at night, some, what do they call that stuff that helps you sleep? Melatonin.
Melatonin.
And if you have an infection, what is it? You add a Z-Pak.
That's right.
You're done.
So that is where, you know, the CDC has lost complete faith in it. I don't listen to them anymore. And by the way, bird flu, swine flu, all that stuff responds to ivermectin. So when they start trying to get you all hyped up and all worried about stuff, say, screw you. Go find a provider that'll take care of you the way they should be taken care of. Ask questions.
Or go online and, you know, whatever.
Yep. Just saying.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Yep. And if you're getting those vaccines, please talk to a provider that knows what they're talking about.
Please think twice.
Yep.
How did it work for you the first time? That's what I say to everybody. With it, everybody that gave me shit about the vaccine, right? Yeah. I was working in an office environment. Everybody gave me shit, you know, because I was like the last one to get a vaccine card turned in, you know. And I finally got that done, and then all these assholes who went and got this mRNA bullshit, every one of them started falling over like dominoes. And then they went for another shot, and guess what happened again? They got COVID again.
VAIDS, vaccine-acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. That's what happens.
Yeah, this spike protein shit that they're finding from this mRNA vaccine is really bad news. Mm-hmm. It is really bad news. The law of unintended consequences, or maybe it was intended. I don't know.
Anyway, that's all I have to bring up. What do you got, sir?
What do I got? Huh. We had an earthquake.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that. After 2 hours later, when they sent out the yellow alert or the emergency broadcast system, what to do just in case an earthquake happens.
Ugh. Well, you know, an earthquake is kind of like, you know, the fire alarm going off and then putting out an announcement after the fact saying what to do in case of a fire. I mean, shit. What were they supposed to do? An earthquake? Look, I'm not going to give them a whole lot of crap for that, okay? I'm not going to give them a lot of crap for that, because what are they supposed to do, right? And you know that you're going to get aftershocks after an earthquake, right?
Right.
Well, I think that's actually fairly useful. That's right. Not a big deal. But the breathless reporting on, like, the tiny little earthquake and the, holy shit, the world's coming to an end. It's global warming and climate change and all this other shit. It's a fucking earthquake, guys.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
Well, let's talk about something else. You know, that I just thought that was a funny little anecdote from the news this week.
Oh, wait. And by the way, you have an eclipse coming up, and that is throwing everyone to a tizzy, too. Go ahead, sir. I didn't mean to run.
Give me a break. So I'm sure everybody by now has heard about the boat that hit the bridge over the Patapsco River, Baltimore Harbor. I'm not sure if we talked about this or we had a program.
We have not. Charles, was it Key? The Key Bridge?
The Key Bridge.
The one that wrote the Star Spangled Banner?
Yeah, it's named after Francis Scott Key. That's correct.
Yep.
Maryland's, you know, favorite resident, I guess, besides the blue Chesapeake Bay crab. However, yeah, that's a shit show.
Mm.
I'm not going to comment on, you know, what happened. I'm not going to comment on how it, I'm not going to comment on what happened with the boat. I don't know.
Right.
It's all speculation. Some people are saying this, that, and I don't care about any of that. What I care about is six people were killed.
Right.
Or was it eight? Six or eight?
Six.
Six.
Mostly construction workers who were the heroes that saved a lot of people because they stopped the traffic.
Well, these guys...
and police officers, too.
Yeah, well, you know, look. They recovered three of the bodies so far. That's a twisted, mangled mess. This is not the first bridge I've seen at the bottom of of water, okay? I saw the 35W bridge after it collapsed. I drove over it an hour before it did, right? Very, very frightening. I got news for you. The economic impact of that event, not to mention the loss of lives, it's absolutely monumental.
Mm.
That is one of the busiest ports in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And that port is going to be closed. I think they were able to get a couple of boats out of the harbor, smaller boats. But they've got to get that channel clear, and it's going to take them a long time. They're saying probably by the end of April, they should have the majority of that cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
But the rebuilding of that bridge is going to be, it's going to be tens of billions of dollars to rebuild that bridge. It's going to take years. All those people that live on the other side of Baltimore, on the other side of 695,
mm-hmm.
like Dundalk area out towards the shore, eastern end of the bay, they're screwed. I mean, they can get out of there and they can maneuver around, but it's going to take an hour longer to get anywhere, right?
Wow.
It's going to be bad. That's really bad news. It just goes to show you just how sensitive the infrastructure really is in this country.
Mm-hmm.
We're not really serious about protecting it.
Right.
We don't seem to be.
Well, like you said, we're not going to get into what caused it or anything, but we do know that the boat went into one of the support pylons. I believe if they would have put, there's barricades that can go around these or bumpers that could actually protect the pylons. And yeah, that's probably going to be a standard thing going forward, I'm guessing. But again, it's too early to tell.
Well,
but we all saw this large boat go into the pylon, the whole bridge collapsed like a bunch of Tinker Toys.
Well, let me ask you a question. How much kinetic energy do you think that boat was packing at 10 miles an hour weighing 500,000 tons?
It was a 90,000 ton water displacement.
Yeah.
The momentum itself, it takes a mile to get these things to turn, let alone stop. And when they have bow thrusters and all this other stuff, doesn't do you any good if there's no power to supply to those bow thrusters. And the only reason I know this stuff is because I've been on cruise ships. I've been very interested in cruise ships, and they don't have tugboats anymore because they have these bow thrusters. So
fascinating.
This and the cruise ships too. I mean, they're upwards of 110,000 displaced tons of water.
They're huge.
Ginormous. Again, you're talking hundreds of gallons of barrels of oil for 1 mile. Even though they're a big electric motor type engines.
Don't the cruise ships run on turbines?
Yeah, they're electric diesel. You know, it's electric.
Diesel, are they diesel electric or are they turbine electric?
Don't know, actually. I don't know. I know that there's electrical, you know, generators that give the power.
And I think run they by use, diesels. I think the propulsion is diesel electric.
Yeah.
And I think the power system on the boat is turbine.
Right.
It is. It's jet turbine.
I believe.
They run a jet turbine generator to power all the electric on the boat. That's amazing. That's
really cool. Using fuel oil, so I think it's diesel. Anyway.
Well, probably diesel.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about our trip to New York, shall we?
Ah, that's right.
Yeah, how about that?
Forgot about that. So I got a call. You called me up, said, hey, I'm going to be in New York. I said, cool. I'll meet you down there. I got some time.
Yeah.
So I took the train, Amtrak. It was a nice ride. I mean, it's better than taking an airplane because you don't have to, like, put your tray table in the upright and locked position while during takeoff because the train just goes. So that's kind of nice. Seats are comfortable. You know?
Yeah, it was great. It was fine.
So we get down to New York City, and I think by, you know, it was rain. It was a rainy day. It was cloudy. It was cold. It was rainy. Nasty day. Terrible day. And when did I start complaining? Probably about.
I think we were 5 minutes in. I think when we walked out of the restaurant, we had our little bite to eat there for lunch because we were both starving. I think the kvetching started about 5 feet outside the door when it was pouring rain. It was
pouring rain, and you're much more of a hiker than I ever was. But yeah, you know, it's just I was sick and tired of the, you know, it's crowded. It smells like pure
piss and pot, man.
I was complaining about the pot more than anything else. I was
it's all you smell. It's urine and pot. That's all you smell in New York City.
But got to be with you and hang out. Had a great dinner. We'll talk about that in a second. But yeah, I think that the other thing that bothers me about New York City is there's not a lot of public restrooms. There's not a lot of place. You can't just sit down and take a breath because it's raining out. There's a lot of people. You don't want to sit in fecal contaminated benches. I get it. But the thing that really got to me was you can't go into a building without having a reason or paying for it. And if your name's not on a list, you ain't going upstairs. So, okay.
All right, Bill.
Anyway, sorry. But I did learn something. You taught me quite a bit. One of the reasons why, you know, you're a watch connoisseur, I would say. It's an interest that you have.
I have a healthy interest in horology.
Horology. That's the study of watches. That's timekeeping.
Exactly. Yes, that's right.
Yep.
I have a very healthy passion for watches.
Now, normally when you think of fine timekeeping instruments, a lot of people would say Rolex comes to mind, you know. I always thought Rolex were expensive and they look kind of gaudy, and I don't like them. I'm more of a functional type person. I mean, let's talk about when we first started out with, when we were kids, we had Casios.
Oh, sure. Everybody had a Casio.
I had a Casio. I started out with the temperature sensor, and then I had the G-Shock 100 meter, G-Shock 200 meter. I was pretty rough on watches anyway.
Oh, yeah.
As I got older...
We were kids. We were rough on everything, man.
That's right.
Every watch I ever owned when I was a kid is just absolutely just gouged to shit.
Right. Oh, the Timex Indiglo. The Indiglos.
Remember those? Yes, the Indiglo.
Pretty cool. I mean, and they were all quartz run watches, which is pretty cool. Sure. So as I got out of college, I started working. I think I picked up my first. I had a little bit nicer watch. I think it was a Citizen. It wasn't the one I'm racking my brain. I can't find that one. But so I went and got a Citizen Eco Drive Skyhawk Blue Angels edition. Wow. What a watch that was. And it has the E3B flight computer on it. And I, being a pilot, love having that kind of watch because it's the calculator on your wrist better than the electronic ones.
It's a tool.
That's right. It's a tool. And it syncs with, you know, the power source comes from light and the battery. I think the battery would need to be replaced because it's over 5 years old.
It's capacitor. A capacitor.
It's a capacitor. Excuse me. And this is where you get into the stuff. You know, I the other day I watched you showed me after we got back. Seiko is your favorite watch, from my understanding.
Correct. Absolutely.
And I was looking at these Seikos, and I'm looking at how much they cost. Some are $6,000, some are $9,000, some are, you know, $2,000, $3,000. I was like, holy cow, what makes these things so special? And the salespeople are of course trying to sell you something, but they're also very knowledgeable, and it's a lot of fun to talk to these sales reps and get an idea of their expertise. I really enjoy talking to people that are experts in their field.
Oh, sure.
Because you learn a lot and they're nice people and then they they get a chance to kind of, quote, show off a little bit, you know, because they know what they're doing. And
it's their job to educate the consumer.
Right. And even the store we were in, New York City, is, of course, everything's gated and you know, small stores. You can't walk, you know, you can't, you know, we're dripping wet from the rain and you can't, you're stumbling on cases because everything's so compact in New York because space is at a premium. But he did say that he put the iron fence inside the glass. Oh, yeah. Because you get through the glass and then you're at a fence. Yeah, forget it. We're not getting in there.
Well, yeah, they have to take security very seriously.
That's
there.
True.
I mean, when we were down on the edge of the jewelry district, down on the edge of the diamond district, I could have taken you down to 47th Street. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. But those shops down on 47th Street, they're the higher end shops. You know, they sell a lot of Rolex, a lot of Patek, a lot of Lange, very, very high end shit. Mm-hmm. A lot of secondhand high end stuff, which is okay. That's okay. All right. I took you to a smaller watch store.
Right.
The most expensive thing in the store was probably no more than like $6,000.
Right.
They specialize in the anything from mild to wild they can do, mm-hmm. but their sweet spot is really, you know, Mueller and high-end Seiko and
Hamilton,
and they've got Le Jour, and they've got a few other very, very nice brands.
Notice how we didn't say Casio or Timex, just saying.
No. But they have a nice selection of watches. You know, people have got this thing about, oh, New York City, people are mean. Did you feel unwelcome anywhere you went?
Not at all.
Did you feel unsafe, except for when I left you out in front of the security building here? Sorry, man.
Well, the guy that, I mean, I was enjoying people watching until this one guy was having a conversation with himself. I recognized that he was schizophrenic, and I was just keeping him at arm's length because I didn't want him, you know, I was a little bit inside the 6-foot rule. I shouldn't have been, but
21 feet, buddy, 21 feet.
Yeah, that too. Oh, yeah. Excuse me, 21 feet. Yeah, because if you
bring 21 extra feet in New York City, my friend.
Right, and that's a problem. They're so goddamn crowded down there. You can't get 21 feet away from someone.
There's no space. There's no space.
Anyway, so I felt very welcome. It was nice. I mean, I learned a lot. And
those guys in that store, weren't they fantastic?
Right, they were. And the Citizen, I mean, I like Citizen. I'm a big fan of Citizen watches. And
there's absolutely nothing wrong with the Citizen watch.
Right, and I had the light, you know, the light-powered, you know, energy capacitor. But I learned something new. You taught me that the watches that, you know, Seiko, that they perfected the movements where just by moving or normal use, they get wound up, I guess, right?
Okay, an automatic movement has been around for a very, very long time.
Okay.
What Seiko did was, I believe, you know, listen, this is kind of off the tracks from a political podcast, but that's okay. Seiko, there used to be a thing. If you want to buy a knife, go see the Japanese.
Right.
Right? Because they make some of the finest blades in the world. If you want to buy a watch, go talk to the Swiss.
Right.
I completely disagree.
I'll tell you, Seiko is a nice watch. Oof.
I completely disagree. Seiko has been the only company that's really done any high-level innovation of a mechanical movement in 100 years. Mm-hmm. Okay? Yeah. They're all the same. For the most part, they're all the same, whether it's a Rolex or even a mid-tier Seiko. The movements do exactly the same thing.
Right.
There's no difference. Now, Seiko introduced something called spring drive, which uses mechanical energy, converts it into, you know, it drives the hands, but there's a powered feature in there that's also driven by the rotor. That's a regulator that slows your second hand down or speeds it up and calibrates the watch in situ. On the fly, and that watch is accurate. A mechanical movement is accurate within like 1 second a month. A $150,000 Rolex watch will only guarantee plus or minus 15 seconds a day.
Wow.
You tell me, do you want to buy a watch from the Swiss or do you want to buy a watch from the Japanese? I'll take the Japanese.
Right.
And you're going to pay a hell of a lot less for it.
Right. But the quality, so when you showed me actually, after I got to kind of get a sense of what these watches are and getting to see, doing some YouTube research, I'm impressed. I mean, putting that stuff together, there was this guy, you know, that was doing a video you showed me, had the fingers like an orthopedic surgeon trying to do plastics, you know, plastic surgery, you know, the fine suturing repair, right? His fingers big, you know. But he put the watch back together. I was like, and the parts are small.
Small is not the word.
Like micro. I mean, it's
so small.
Very small. And you have to know what you're doing. And it's an amazing piece of engineering that's been around for 150 years or 100 years or something like that.
Oh, wristwatches have been around a long time. Yeah. Wristwatches came into fashion. There were no real wristwatches, very few, before World War One.
Mm-hmm.
And what they figured out in World War One is pilots needed a watch.
Right.
And pulling out a pocket watch was very, very difficult all the time.
Right.
So what they did was they took a pocket watch and they welded two U-shaped things to it, put a strap through it, tied it around the pilot's wrist.
Mm-hmm.
It was a small sized pocket watch.
Right.
They adapted it to a wristwatch for the pilots.
Right.
And everything took on a life of its own from there, right? Everything got smaller. Everything got smaller as manufacturing precision increased. Over time, the natural evolution was started big. Like, remember your first computer?
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't even barely carry the son of a bitch. That's right.
It was in a room.
It was in a room. Now I have a laptop with more horsepower than the UNIVAC that put the man on the moon.
Correct.
That took up a football field on a $599 laptop.
Right.
It's the same thing.
Right. So it just goes to show you that, you know, time kind of creeps along, but there are some things that are tried and true. When I was talking with the gentleman in the watch store that we were in, you know, I've been using what's that?
Joseph Edwards.
Yeah, Joseph Edwards. You know, I've had three Apple Watches over the last 6 years or so. And
how much,
you know,
how much did that cost you?
Three times about $1,500. You know, with all, you know.
Well, shit! You could have bought a really nice pocket or wristwatch for that.
Let me before you jump down. You know, the guilt factor there. It's interesting because we were talking, you know, I said, what, you know, people use their phones, you know, they just want to use their phone or they just want to, you know, they don't want to have a watch on, you know, a lot of the Gen Zers, they don't wear watches, but we still do because that's what we grew up with. And people are saying, well, they're getting away from the Apple Watches. They're going back to these old tried and true, devices. Yes. Because they get tired of trying to charge batteries.
Well,
the battery dies after a certain amount of time.
Hold on. Let me ask you another question. What kind of residual value does your Apple Watch have after about 5 or 6 years?
Zero.
Let me ask you another question. How much residual value did that thing have that I had from 1968?
A lot.
Okay. So there's the difference, right?
Right.
If you want to get involved with mechanical watches, you are getting involved with something that has value.
Correct.
An Apple Watch goes obsolete, breaks, battery dies, not worth fixing, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, and it can't go down past, water. It's water resistant. It's not, right. It's not waterproof to 500 meters.
Right. Good luck. You know, you want to wear that thing around? You want to go on vacation with an Apple Watch? I don't think so.
No.
How much shit? How many people get pushed into? How many people go swimming with those goddamn things on, and they come out and they go, "Oops!"
Right.
Well, there goes $900.
Right. So that's what I'm talking about. That was some of the takeaways from my trip. Besides dinner at Keen's restaurant, was phenomenal.
Awesome. Oh, you like that, huh?
Oh my God, I'm going back there again.
Yeah.
So
that's pretty cool, isn't it?
Isn't that place a lot of fun? But it was a lot of fun to see you in person. We didn't do a show because we were walking around New York City drenched, and I didn't feel like carrying, schlepping around equipment.
That was a long freaking day, wasn't it, my man?
Let me tell you that the train ride on the way home was fun. Anyway, wow, 1 hour, 20 minutes. Nice.
Wow.
So anyway, that's what happens when you don't do a show on a regular basis.
I'm so tired. I lost track of time. I haven't even been looking at watching it.
Anyway. So I wanted to remind everyone, thank you so much for listening to the Signal 50 podcast. We're two lifelong friends. I love to talk about all kinds of stuff now. We're going to, you know, we'll talk about current events too. That's important. But we want to talk about this stuff too. I'm Bravo Golf 5902. You can find me on Getter and True Social, where I follow President Trump with honor and humility. I also can be found at Signal 50 Podcast on X, and my buddy old pal Alpha, well, you can find him on X, AlphaCR288, but he's too busy to do anything.
Pretty much.
Sir?
All right. Well, I'd like to thank our Stove Tales and Airmen for protecting us 24-7, 365. Thank you very much. Police, fire, and EMS. Be really careful out there. Dangerous job, and thanks for what you do.
So I'm going to be going on vacation for a little bit, but we'll see what we're doing from the road if I can get something up and running. But you all have a great time out there. Be careful, and we'll see you next time here on the Signal 50 podcast. Take care.